Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peep State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peep State Pandemonium.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Peach State Pandemonium for March 22nd, 2012. This is Michael Norris, and as always, I am joined by I'm joined by my tag team partners, those glamour boys from Georgia, gorgeous Jerry Oates and beautiful Bobby Simmons. How are you guys doing this evening?
Good. He finally got the intro right.
I like that. That was good. Yeah.
I'm buttering Bobby up since I got to stay at the Simmons Motor Lodge this weekend. I got to make sure I still got the presidential suite.
It's ready for you, such as it is.
Oh, man. Well, you guys see, and not to start off about football, but what's going on with the Saints? I guess I was blind all season. I didn't know all that junk was going on with them.
Well, I don't know when it actually became public, but you know that's nothing new. Only thing they got them for, they told them to stop it, and they didn't. And
yep, there's the caught and the uncaught, and they happened to get caught.
Did you see what Sean Payton's salary was going to be this year?
Oh, yeah.
That would make you sick, would it?
You know, and somebody said, I was watching NFL Network last night before I went to bed, and they said that, you know, a football coach, you know, he spends 70, 80 hours a week, you know, with his team and his coaches game planning, getting ready, you know. He said Sunday's like gravy when they play the games. He said all the work's done during the week, which I can understand. He said, but can you imagine this guy? They've told, you know, he can't have anything to do with the team. He can't be around it. I mean, they said, it said money, yeah, but more so than that, man, they're just disrupting this guy's life.
I'm telling you, that, you know, and here they are without a coach, no defensive coordinator. Of course, he was gone. They had hired another one, but I don't know. Just a mess.
Do you think Payton will ever get another job in the NFL, even after he serves out his suspension?
Oh, yeah, he'll still be the Saints coach.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wait.
But they said Greg Williams' suspension is indefinite.
Yep. Well, they got Payton, they got him for lying. And then they found out that he was trying to form a collusion among the coaches because he was telling them we all got to get our story straight. And somebody ratted him out. So that's what they got
him for.
What's
wrong with that? If you go tell it, you got to have everybody on board. You know?
Yes, sir.
So what were they, and I've only caught bits and pieces of this, were they paying their players is like putting bounties on other players?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the reason Kurt Warner retired.
Well, he was one of the ones they named four players that they actually had a bounty on. Aaron Rodgers, Kurt Warner, Brett Favre, and Cam Newton. And, I mean, it was something like $15,000 if they carted them off the field.
You know, if I was going to do that, if I was the defensive coordinator, I wouldn't tell but, like, two guys. If this gets out, it's on you. It's not on me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't let every Tom, Dick, and Harry know about it. And that Vilmer, I saw this afternoon, they still going to they're not through with the players yet.
Oh, they ain't even started with them yet. They said there was 22 players involved.
We might get a job with the Saints.
Yeah, I heard that.
We might could block somebody a time or two, but
I watched the replay.
Harley raced at that all the time, you know.
Yeah. Going down the highway.
Yeah, I watched the replay of the NFC Championship game here last year, was it the NFC Championship, or it might have just been a playoff game. Anyway, when Minnesota played New Orleans in New Orleans, and they beat Brett Favre up so bad.
They really did.
He took shots he didn't have to take. I mean, they were just absolutely trying to kill him.
But the most beautiful thing I heard of all about all this, Bobby, they were talking about it today. Why wasn't the referees flagging them?
Oh, yeah. I told somebody today, if I was Brett Favre, you know, he lives in Mississippi, it ain't that far over to New Orleans. I might go over, after all this came out, I might take a ride over there and talk to Mr. Payton face to face. I mean, that's just...
Well, it's you know, I'm sure that's not the only team that does it. But
oh, yeah.
Look at what the Raiders did in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
60s. Good Lord. I don't know.
Turn it into hockey or something, aren't they?
Exactly. All they need is clubs now. But you know, people, the more you see of that, the more the people come to the games. They love it.
Oh, yeah.
That's what sells tickets.
How many tickets you reckon we sold in our business over the years in every territory known to man simply by some manager or some guy going on TV and going, I'm paying to bring this guy in to take care of somebody.
There you go.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. Violent sales. There's no
yes,
doubt
sir.
About it. Well, Mike, you didn't load up the show right. We lost one, didn't we?
Yes, we did, and I was going to get to that.
Well, I'm sorry.
And I'm thinking of the same person that you're thinking of. We lost Joe Blanchard this morning. He died at 8
right.
o'clock this morning, 84 years old.
Hmm.
Never heard anybody say anything bad a bit about Joe Blanchard. Did you ever work for him, Jerry?
Yes, I did. Yeah, he ran San Antonio when I was out there.
Right.
To be honest with you, I don't know if that was his town or he took care of it for Fritz or what. It was kind of.
It was his town. There in the when he first started, he bought San Antonio in the '60s sometime, and I'm not sure who had it prior to that. But there for most of the. '60s and into the '70s, it was a kind of a three-way cooperation between he, Fritz, and Paul Bosch. They swapped talent, you know, they you know, kind of used the same headliners and everything. And then I guess he and Bosch still worked together up until Blanchard went out of business in '85 or '86 or what it was, but he and Fritz had quit working together. You know, he was the first one with a show on cable TV. He had USA before Vince got it. In fact, Vince ended up having to sell his TV slots to Vince. That's how Vince got onto the network that started, you know, started his national climb. But yeah, Blanchard was a lot of people only remember him as a promoter, but he was also a tremendous worker in his day. Was a manager back out in Kansas, played Canadian football. I think we mentioned the show that you and I did with we were talking about football players that became wrestlers. He and Gene Kaninsky and Wilbur Snyder all played for the Edmonton Eskimos at one time.
Is that right?
So we're all teammates, yeah. Pretty good group of wrestlers there, wasn't it?
Really. But, you know, you was talking about Houston. When I was out there in 73, Bosch used talent out of Dallas, of course, but it was run more like St. Louis. Paul did his own thing,
right.
You know. And what a nice man and what a good payoff man he was. Very
yeah,
nice.
I've always heard that about him. Of course, he and Blanchard used a lot of you know, especially different for the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, they brought a lot of the guys up from out of Mexico because they had such a large Hispanic population in both Houston and San Antonio.
Sure did.
that's where Neil Mascaris was big there. Jose Lothario, of course, El Santo, Gorman and Goliath, a lot of those guys that they would bring out of Mexico and fill out their cards. And, I think that was what I was reading today was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back with he and Fritz. Fritz, of course, wanted him to, you know, push his sons like he was like Fritz was doing. But Blanchard didn't feel that they would draw because, you know, they kept so many Hispanics on top, you know, because of the Hispanic population.
Well, the thing about it was he knew his town and Paul took care of it, believe me.
Yep.
He really protected his town. And I'm sure Fritz wanted that town for himself.
Yeah, and ended up Watts had it at the tail end, but then it was too late for him. He was already on the downhill slide when he wound up with Houston. Houston was a legendary town. They had, you know, Fort Fox had been involved in it since his active days back in the 40s. He was already involved in the office. I didn't realize this, going back to Joe Blanchard. He was actually, he didn't own part of it, but he was a big star for Barnett and Balk Estes when they had Indianapolis. And he actually, that's where he learned to the promotional end of it. He actually worked in the office with them quite a bit and helped book and everything. So that's where he learned to do all that.
Well, it was a wonderful town.
Yeah, that state was so big, it was not a problem to have three different offices out there.
Well, actually, they had four at one time too, because you know the Funks had Amarillo there.
Well, they had the Funks in Amarillo and Blanchard, San Antonio, Dallas, and Bosch. I mean, you know, it was just and you could run. It was so big, and you know, if you were dealing with local TVs, man, there was no way you was going to step on each other.
And that's what it was, exactly.
Yeah. I had somebody tell me one time, said Texas was so flat, said if you broke down and you was naked, you'd have time to knit something before the headlights that was coming at you got to you.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, I don't know if y'all ever crossed that state. You don't think you'll ever get across it, ever.
I've dealt that way just about Houston. It'd take a day and a half just to cross Houston. I had in-laws that lived in Alvin, and every once in a while we would go into Houston for something. It would take forever. I thought Atlanta was spread out, but Houston, Texas is something else.
It is. It is really, really a big place.
All that, now there's nothing there as far as...
Isn't that sad?
...gets the thing running that it's of any significance. I know... a friend of mine, Bruce Tharp, whose father was Chet Tharp, was the ring announcer in Fort Lauderdale, Miami, for Eddie Graham. But Bruce is a lawyer and lives out there, and he's got he's been trying to run a promotion out there for years. And it's affiliated with what's left of the NWA, but
he's suing the NWA.
Yeah, I was going to say they're kind of in a power struggle right now.
I didn't need, you know, there's really, really, there's no such thing as the NWA anymore. I mean, that's almost.
No,
like,
there's not. And, you know, and I've often wondered, you know, these people that say they own it now, and I'm wondering how they come to, you know, how all of that shook down and how that came to be.
As the promoters
died and the offices shut down, I mean, you know, there was. I don't know how anybody could come to own that because it was an association of promoters. Bruce, I met Bruce and I'd met him before, but I actually spent about 2 hours with him in Vegas last year. And very, very well spoken, very articulate gentleman. And he's running some shows out there, and he said he was doing okay. He said he wasn't getting rich, but it was steadily building, and he was giving them old school wrestling. And then I seen something came across on a computer the other day about he had won the right that the suit should be heard in Texas, because evidently the NWA, whoever's got it, lives in Charlotte, or whoever supposedly owns it lives in Charlotte, and he was telling all the promoters to get them to join that they were covered under a blanket
insurance
policy with the NWA.
Oh, they tried that up crap on me when I was running.
Well, come to find out, if you read the fine print, it's only good for 75 people. Anything over 75 people that don't cover nothing.
Going.
That's just...
Yeah, please.
Well, I don't know how your guys' week went, but I had one of the best days I've had in a long time this past Tuesday. I got up and drove over to Pensacola and picked up my friend Bill Bowman, and we drove over and picked up our friend Roberto Soto and drove out and spent about 2 hours with Ken Lucas.
No, you did not.
Yes, we did. That was. I told Bill afterwards. It makes me sad. I mean, I had a blast just sitting there listening to the three of them swap tales and stuff. And I thought, you know, it really saddens me that I got into the business 10 years too late, because I would have loved to have been, you know, a part of hanging around with guys like that. And I worked with Ken some, and once I got in the business, but the you know, the hierarchy of the camaraderie wasn't there. You know, it was already starting to go away in the early 80s when I was in the business. And but we sat there and laughed. We were sitting there, and Roberto's sitting next to Ken, and you'll appreciate this, Jerry. We were sitting there, and Ken reaches over and taps Roberto on the leg, and he says, and Ken's got this huge, huge pit bull. It's the biggest pit bull I've ever seen. His head is probably a foot wide. That's how big this dog is. And Ken said, Roberto, I'm going to show you how smart that dog is. He said, tell the dog to bark at the cows. Roberto said, I'm not doing that. He said, tell the dog to bark at the cows and watch what he does. So Roberto says, hey, dog, bark at the cows. And the dog just looked at him. And he said, Roberto looked at him and said, he didn't do anything. He said, I told you he was smart. There's no cows around here.
Let's get Lucas. How's he doing?
He's saying, excuse me, hanging in there. He's, he's having some, he had sinus surgery back last year, and he's still, you know, fighting with that. And he's having to use a walker most of the time now because, you know, he had back surgery about 2 years ago, and he's still not recovered from that. But, you know.
And, you know, he always had a bad back.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate
he's hanging in there. He asked about you. I told him you were the head snake wrangler at Tybee Island, Georgia.
I know he didn't believe that.
No.
I love Ken Lucas.
Yeah, he was.
I'm going to need to get his number. I got a number on him, but I don't know if it's still good or not.
Okay. I will pass that along. And I'm not going to promise anything, but I'm working on him. I'm hoping to get him on the show with us. So, Ken's funny about certain things like that. But he told me when I left, he said, "I'll do, you know, anytime I've got the time, I'll do the show." I said, "Well, I just need to know when you're available." He said, "That's the problem. I never know because he's still got one son that's, you know, not doing real good in the hospital." And
is he in a nursing home?
Yeah, he's in some sort of a rehab center of some sort, and they had a bad spell with him a couple of weeks ago and thought they were going to lose him, but he fought through it. No. But, I mean, he'll never be well. And so it's just, you know, so Ken just never knows when he's going to have to take off and go down there and do that. But he's right there in Gulf Breeze on the beach, or near the beach, just him and his dog, and happy as he can be. Seems to be doing well.
Well, I'm glad for him. I really am.
He asked about you. He asked about Ted. And,
that makes me feel good.
But, doing as well as can be expected, but that was fun just to be around with those guys. And Roberto lives there in Pensacola, Bill lives there in Pensacola, and neither one of them, you know, really go out too much. So hopefully the two of them will start hooking up with each other and going to lunch every once in a while or whatever.
What's Roberto doing?
Working out. He works out every morning and then goes and washes his car.
He told me this year in Mobile, he said some days he's so bored he goes over to Walmart and sits in the parking lot and just watches people. He said, he doesn't know anybody. It's really sad. He's just kind of there by himself.
I don't know if either one of you ever had the pleasure of wrestling him, but I tell you what, he was without a doubt one of the smoothest guys in the ring that I ever worked with. Really.
Unbelievable.
I refereed a ton of his matches. I never wrestled him. I used to travel with him. What a funny.
You missed something, Bobby. Both of you did. I mean, you didn't even know you was in there with anybody. He was just, I always liked Roberto. I really did. He was hard, you know. Some guys, you know, he was one of those guys. He liked you. If he didn't, he didn't.
That
was no gray area with him.
Well, he's still pulling ribs. He's got a back porch, or he's up on the second floor of his apartment complex, and he's got a back deck back there that's covered. And he said he'll sit out there, and if he sees somebody coming, he'll holler, "Hey," and then hide.
He
said, "I got to do something to entertain myself."
Where's his brother, Mike?
In New Jersey.
Is he?
Yeah, he's got a brother and sister in New Jersey. Of course, his mother lived up there. She passed away at the end of last year. But man, he's in New Jersey. He's got at least one sister up there. He's got a brother and a sister in Milton, Florida, which he says he never sees. So,
how did he wind up in Pensacola? I never thought he'd have wound up there.
Well, his sister was living in Milton. He lived in Milton up until last year, and then he moved to Pensacola. He was in Milton.
Did he live with his sister for a while, Mike?
Yeah, I think so.
Because she had a kid. Yeah. I think the kid used to drive him crazy.
Yeah. But he rode with me one time to one of the get-togethers in Georgia at Bobby's church right after I moved down here. It was the first time he came to the Mobile reunion. And we were talking about when we were going to get together in Georgia. And he asked me, he said, "Well, look, if you're going..." He said, "You know, if you don't mind, I'll ride up there with you. And, you know, I'll just find a hotel or something up there." And I said, "That's fine." So he rode up there with me. I picked him up in Milton, and he rode up there with me. And then he stayed overnight. I can't remember where I got him. Somewhere in Snellville, I think. I dropped him off in Snellville and then picked him back up. And then he rode home with me. But I laughed both ways so hard. He was so funny. And he doesn't, he
funny.
Just, no, he's serious.
No, he don't
he
try to be.
But he's in, now that he's over his neck surgery, you know, he was working a regular job in Milton, and he'd been on the job, I think he said less than a week, and he had a 100-pound steel something to fall on his head. And, ended up having to have neck surgery and all that, so he's on disability and all that stuff. I rib him all the time. I'll call him and he doesn't answer the phone, and then he'll call me back. I said, "Why didn't you answer the phone?" I said, "What are you doing, standing down there in front of Home Depot hoping to pick up some day labor work?"
Oh, my God.
I'm glad he's my friend, because he probably wouldn't put up with me doing
something. Oh, he'd never speak to you again.
The first year he'd come to the reunion in Mobile, Jerry, we'd start telling stories, and he'd go, "No, it wasn't me, it was my brother." "No, it wasn't your brother, it was you."
So funny. Oh. So he's not able to do anything now, huh?
I think it's he doesn't have to. I mean, he's still in good shape. He works out, you know, like I said, he works out every. He said there's a little rinky-dink gym there in his apartment complex. He works out every morning. And he looks good. He looks very good to be. He told me the other day he's 65 years old.
Is he?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, he always took care of himself. Always did.
But I carried over a bag full of books for wrestling-related books for Mr. Bowman to read while I'm on the road. I told him something to keep him company, including, and I'll get this plug in, the book I just finished this weekend, Bo James' book, Do You Want to Be a Wrestler Kid? What a great book that is.
Isn't that thing good?
It's amazing. I told Bo, I sent him an email after I finished it. And I said, you know, the whole time I'm reading this book, I'm thinking there's, you know, 15 years difference between when I was in the business and when you broke in the business. And there's you know, 20, 25 different years difference in somebody like Bowman. But I've heard tell the same type of experience. It just never changes. It's so weird that you can apply, and it still applies, you know, working bad towns and bad buildings and in front of crazy people and all this stuff. But what a great book. What a great book. And he sent me an email a while ago. I said, plug the book. Tell everybody. Everybody has to, needs to own two copies of it. So that's what
Tell the truth, though. Isn't that one of the funniest things you ever read when he talks about the woman on the slide board?
That
is absolutely the funniest thing. And then to go to the town and the woman be sitting on the front row when he got there. That's the funniest thing I've ever read.
Speaking of guys down in Pensacola, does anybody ever go see Tony Charles?
We were talking about him the other day. And Lucas said the last time he saw him was about 2 or 3 years ago. And said he asked about Ken's wife, and of course Ken lost his wife several years ago, and he said his mind's just not there. And he said the last couple of times he tried to go see him, he wouldn't even come to the door.
Really?
Mm.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
And Roberto saw him, said he saw him somewhere, and this has been probably 5 or 6 years ago. He was fishing somewhere, and Roberto was going by and saw him and waved at him. But I don't know. I hate to hear that about Tony. He was always such a nice guy.
He was that.
And a pleasure to work with. God, he was so good. You're talking about smooth in the ring. But you could just tell by locking up with him he could hurt you.
You could do that too.
As small as he was, you could tell.
But he was in shape, my gosh.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. Well, guys, I'm going to have us take a break real quick and pay the bills. When we come back, we'll kind of go through some results and clippings that I came across year 1973 in Georgia, both the NWA office as well as the All South office, and we'll kind of compare how the cards were shaped and some of the angles they were running, and hopefully stir up some memories from you guys since you guys were heavily involved in it. And that way we'll have a little something to talk about. But I'm gonna.
Where'd you get these clippings from? Smithsonian Institute.
My friend Dale Ingram sent them to me several years ago. He got them from, I guess, just doing on either the newspaper site or actually going to the libraries and getting microfiche. But he sent me a lot of Gulf Coast stuff, and he threw in all this Georgia stuff, and I was fascinated by looking at what all was going on in Georgia. And you can see, because he sent me clippings for all of 73 and all of 74, and you can slowly see the Gunkel promotion starting to slide off the tracks a little bit. But I don't know that we'll get into that. Maybe another show somewhere down the line. We'll go into it a little bit further along towards the end. But it's some interesting stuff as to who all the NWA office brought in to go against the competition, because you guys were going head to head some nights in some of the cities. But anyway, let me play this ad real quick, and then we come back, we'll jump off into that.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling, and you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Doesn't it? Oh, that girl wonder what happened in Columbus on her birthday. I remember now.
Okay.
I was partners with the McGuire twins that night. We wrestled the Garvins. I'll never forget that song.
And Jerry was hot because he didn't have a mini bike ride.
<That's> almighty. I hope she still remembers that as well as I do.
Well, you were the only one standing outside on the ring apron, weren't you?
That is correct, sir. Those garbage looked across at me like, what have we got? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. Well, did they ride with somebody to the towns, or did they ride their motor scooters, or what did they do? How did they get back and forth?
I guess they had their own vehicle. I never saw them ride with anybody. Did you, Bobby?
No. No.
I know that the motorcycles they had, they would ride them. Did they ride them into the arena that night?
No, They wobble to the ring. I mean, they walk to the ring.
Did they start at the opening match and make their way to the ring?
We were on like third, and I think they started out when it started.
Jeez.
Lord have mercy. I can't imagine having to work with those guys.
Isn't one of them still alive?
No, they're both dead now.
Oh, they are, really?
Which one was it came to Mobile? Was it Benny?
That was Benny, yeah.
The year he was there, I had a chance. You know, he sat back there in the back where I normally sit. And I had a chance to talk to him. I mean, nice guy. He was still pretty big. He wasn't as big as he was, but he was still pretty big. And I think he died maybe shortly after the reunion that year. But I can imagine that was a heck of a match.
You know,
Billy died.
I said, you know the Garvins, they made something out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Billy died, I think he was in Japan. He had a wreck on one of those scooters. He was jumping cars on one of those scooters.
That's what I heard, yep.
That has to be a joke.
No, it's a spoof, but what he was jumping, it was a work. He was jumping a little matchbox car. But he wrecked the bike he was on, and I guess it led to a heart attack or whatever, and he died.
I guess he figured those Japanese wasn't going to be able to get him up. Small as they are, I don't know.
Gosh.
Rory Guerrero started them in the business.
Really?
Of course, they were in the Guinness Book of World Records already as being the world's heaviest twins. And they had, I guess it was Honda Motorcycle. They were doing it going from town to town, appearing in Honda dealerships, riding on those little mini bikes. And they were traveling across the country that way. And I guess they made an appearance in Galveston or wherever it was that Guerrero was running for the... I think he was tied in with the Funks at that time. And he got the bright idea to get him in the wrestling business. Well, I don't know. I guess you can't really say that they were trained, because how would you train somebody like that? Because you just basically smarten them up and put them in the ring. But... They were big attractions once or twice after you'd seen them once or twice.
Yeah, that was it.
Attraction was four off, but you know they always brought them in to work. You know, three or four different guys at a time, and they were here. I think they appeared here multiple two or three times over the space of.
Well, you asked an interesting question about how they traveled, I don't know. I never saw them. I mean, I'm assuming they had their own ride, like Jerry said. But, you know, I mean, it's like I'm sitting here thinking Haystacks had a big, like a Suburban.
International.
There you go. There you go. That's what he traveled in, him and his dog.
Yule.
And the only... Of course, he wasn't nearly the size of the McGuire's, but the only big guy that I ever remember coming in here, and they sort of married me and him together because he traveled with me, and I'm glad he did. He was a good guy. Was the big Olympic wrestler, the one that won the one that lost to the Russian?
Taylor.
There you go. Yeah, he traveled with me for 2 weeks when he was here, and what a nice guy. He's just a big fella.
He's gone too.
Yep. Yeah, sure is. When you got up next to Chris, you know, I mean, I saw pictures and stuff, but when I actually met Chris, he gave me a whole new respect for that Russian. His buddy there.
But he did.
Oh, geez. Man.
Well, Chris was big, but he was tall, too. Wasn't he like 6'5", 6'6"?
He Maybe. I mean, he might have been that tall. I can't remember. I don't remember. I was about to say, I was 6'2". I can't remember him being that much taller than me, but he might have been.
Well, he was a massive human being.
I think Vern broke him in, didn't he?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
He went
yeah,
through
he
Vern's
came.
Camp.
Yeah. Ian Patera. Both of them were in the 72 Olympics, and he recruited both of them and put them through his training class. Well, Jerry, I know you were around Bundy. Bundy was wide more than he was heavy.
Yes, yes. He was a nice guy. He was a very nice guy. I don't have any idea what happened to him.
He's still around. I think he lives in, I want to say he lives in New Jersey. I think he was from, wasn't he from Elizabeth, New Jersey or something like that to begin with?
That sounds familiar.
He was, up until a few years ago, he was still doing independent shows.
Really?
I don't think he's working anymore. I think he's had some health issues here in the last couple of years. Yeah, he's still working up until just, a few short years ago. But that was another huge guy. I think Fritz broke him in, didn't he? Did he come out of, what was the guy's name that had the school up in the Northeast? Sharp, Larry Sharp? Did he come out of that school?
Good hell.
I know Bigelow did, Bam Bam Bigelow. But he was after, he was after my time. I'm assuming he was after Bobby's time. Did you work around Bigelow any?
Never did, no.
No, I didn't.
Never met him.
Did you ever have the pleasure, Jerry, of being in a ring with Happy Humphrey?
Never did.
Well, that was sort of a McGuire twin type thing.
He was amazing, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was a huge fella.
He was in the Guinness Book of World Records twice for most loss, weight loss, and then most weight gain. He lost. He went from, I think he was legitimately close to 800 pounds at one time and went down to 230 something, and then gained back up to 700 and something. I think
Did he work for Ann, Bobby?
Yes. Yes, he did. He came in. They used him in battle royals. That's all he did.
Okay.
But, I mean, we were talking here a few weeks ago about the worst building we ever worked in, and I mentioned the Quonset Hut in Murphy, North Carolina, and it was the dressing room was a broom closet, and you could only get one or two guys in there at a time, and then you had to go back outside and hang around in your car. But he wouldn't fit in the broom closet. So they had a picnic table in the corner of the building, and they hung a big quilt up, catty-cornered, and he went behind the quilt on the picnic table.
It must have been a big quilt, Bobby.
Oh, it was. It was. I mean, that was. He wasn't around long, but I remember he was here for maybe a week or two.
Yeah, he traveled more than anything else. He was bigger in the 60s than he was, and then he lost all that weight and then gained it all back and came back and worked a couple of years in the early 70s. I know he worked over there for Bill Golden for a while, too. But he just kind of made the rounds and as a traveling. Well, I'm surprised you never heard Harley Race talk about him because that's one of what's...
Oh, I've heard that story.
Yeah, that's how Harley got started, wasn't it, driving him around?
Yeah, driving him around. Billy Hines the same way.
Harley said, I hold the fat man around. That was Harley's version of it.
Oh.
Oh, man. Before we jump off into these clippings, we got a couple of callers on the line. I want to get on with us here real quick and see if they've got any questions for you guys or comments or offering to make donations or whatever it is they are. So let's see what we've got here. Caller from Jacksonville, you're on the line with us.
Hey, guys, it's Jeff Luce.
Hey, Jeff, what's going on, man?
Not too much. I got a couple questions that I'd like to ask the guys and yourself. First, I want to ask you, Mike, do you know where Michael, Ricky, and Robert went to high school in Pensacola? Because I I think Ricky and Robert went to Escambia, but I'm not sure where Michael
went. Yeah, I'm thinking they went to Escambia, and I'm thinking Hayes went to Brent High School. But I'm not positive. But I'm thinking
there's no Brent High School unless there used to be one.
Yeah, there was a Brent High School because my cousin went to Brent High School.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And I had a question for Bobby, and then I got one for Jerry. The question I have for Bobby is, when Buck Robley, I think it was in 82, when he was booking in Georgia and he brought in Brody, actually I have two questions, I'm sorry, for Bobby. First about Buck Robley, he was booking, he brought in Brody, and they had this opportunity for this great feud between him and Bruce Reed. And after about 2 or 3 weeks, Brody and Robley were gone. What happened with that?
Well, Robley got fired.
Okay.
I don't know time wise.
Tell me why, or is that like?
Booking Georgia was an animal unto itself. And I know Buck had a lot of success in Louisiana, and he may have eventually have had a lot of success in Atlanta, but he just didn't work out. As far as the Brody thing,
okay,
Brody's one fault, or as far as I was concerned, was you couldn't depend on him.
He would just pack up
and go, and he had several little incidences take place where, you know. He was afraid that he was going to have some run-ins with folks, or not other guys, but I mean, he did some things. You know, I mean, you know, like the wheelchair incident on 17 and some other stuff, and he pretty much disappeared.
Uh huh. Okay, and then you remember there was this big build-up for Bob Armstrong and Kabuki to feud, and they had a couple of matches. And then it's like they pulled the plug on that. What was Ole's reason for doing that? Was it not drawing, or?
That I cannot tell you. I do not remember.
Oh, you don't recall?
I do not remember what it specifically would have.
Would Ole have been booking then, or Gary Hart? Usually Kabuki was around Gary Hart.
Gary was never the booker. He was always the assistant booker. But when Gary was the assistant booker here, it was when Renesto was here. I don't remember Gary ever being Ole's assistant.
Right.
Okay, he must have just... then there's a manager.
He's just been in here working, I don't remember anything specific.
How many times... Okay, I've always heard that when Piper took Kabuki to the ring, it wasn't Kabuki, it was Magic Dragon. And because Gary and the real Kabuki would be somewhere else, maybe Dallas, sometimes Kansas City. Did the fans never notice that? Or they just, because, I mean, they sort of looked alike, but, I mean, not totally. I guess with the makeup on, I guess it didn't make a difference.
I don't remember it specifically, but it could very well have been. Sometimes if a guy was double booked, you had to do what you had to do. I don't remember that particular incident per se, but, yeah, I mean, it was possible they could have used somebody else. And like you say, with the makeup, and depending on how you work the match, if you get a lot of action going on right away, then, you know, sometimes people don't pay any attention.
Right. Okay. And then Jerry.
Yes, sir.
I was gonna. You worked in Kansas City a lot, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What was the dynamic there that had it as a successful territory? And it made it fall off so fast. Is there any insight you can add to that?
The only thing that I can add to that is they had a lot of guys that they used, like Bob Brown and guys that were there forever.
Right.
And I think that kind of hurt. I know when Robley went in there, my brother went back out there, and things were, I mean, Robley turned that place upside down. I mean, they did big business.
Yeah, him and Brody, and against the Grapplers, I have seen that match, and oh, man, that was a great match. Well, the one I've seen.
Yeah, they were a good team.
Can I ask
very,
you guys,
very good.
Have you ever seen the Brody Hansen versus Wyndham Fuller match from Japan? I believe it was in 82 or 83. And Brody Hansen, they wouldn't give Fuller and Wyndham nothing. And it's so irritating because you look at Ron Fuller is freaking way bigger than Brody, and Brody couldn't sell for him. And I mean, that's, you know, I look at that, and Brody such and Hansen are such these great internet legends, and people let them off the hook for stuff like that.
Well,
how you guys feel about that?
They were so over in Japan. And you know, by that time, both of them were probably making the majority of their career in Japan. So it's just like anywhere else where you're, you know, your home talent, and you've got these other guys traveling in, you know, you're going to give them very little. The worst episode I've ever seen of that was a Hansen and Brody match against Mil Máscaras and Dos Caras.
Yeah, I've seen that one too.
Three guys in the ring to work on the cell.
Yeah.
Well, Dos Caras is working his tail off, and all the rest of us were just standing around not selling.
Yeah. And, I mean, is there – why couldn't the promoters – why couldn't they, tell them, you know, hey, if you don't sell for these stars – then we're not going to pay you what we promised.
Well,
can get pissy, and you can, you know what I mean? Eventually, they have to learn their lesson, right?
Well, I'm going to tell you about Japan now. I've been there, and I know. I've been there with Hansen. I've been there with Brody. Now, Hansen was the star there. I mean, he was over there all the time. And Brody was a big star over there. And, you know, they didn't care. Did you say Ron Fuller?
Yeah, Ron Fuller.
Ron Fuller wasn't a star in Japan. Neither was Wyndham. I mean, they were just two pieces of meat for them to feed.
And, my point is, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but my point is, you know, they get beat to smithereens, and if Baba wants to bring them back at a later time, the fans aren't going to give a damn. Because they're like, well, they got beat to smithereens by Brody and Hansen. They're just jobbers in our eyes. And that's not fair as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you just have to make that run and see how it was done. They did the Japanese boys the same way.
Yes, they did.
It was a different animal over there, believe me. And they were very successful at what they did over there, the Japanese wrestling office. I mean, it was a great place to go, a great place to pick up a lot of money, and it was a great experience. But, you know, their style was different than ours over here.
Right. So, you know, and when I was stationed in Japan, I was there for 18 months, and I used to watch both programs, All Japan and New Japan. And it was the wrestling, they all sold for each other. But it's like back in the, I guess in the 80s it was different. I don't know, because this was in the 90s. So maybe, I don't know. It's just, and last question, and I'll let you guys get to other guys that and gals that are on the phone. When you guys going to have Mr. Olympia on?
You know that's my
favorite wrestler of all time, and you know I've been chomping at the bit in the conversation with Jerry after all these years. I used to talk to him every Sunday. you know, in Pensacola when I was growing up. And it's been, you know, 30-some years since I've talked to him, and I'm chomping at the bit. Well, not 30, but at least like 20.
We're working on it. I've played phone tag with him a couple of times. It's just with his schedule and everything, it's hard, you know, to pin him down. But he is definitely in the works to be on. We're still planning on having Ron Garvin back with us since we weren't able to connect with him. I've got five or six guys in the hopper that we're going to have on, and Jerry is definitely one of them. Bobby and I both talked to him at the Ted Allen thing, and then I talked to him here in Mobile a couple of weeks ago when he was down. So, and he wants to do the show. It's just a matter of working into his schedule. So,
I'm sorry. If Jerry, not Stubbs, but I'm talking about Jerry Oates. Jerry, if you need Ken's number, I can email it to you. Because I have it. I talk to Ken all the time.
We're either you
close.
Or Mike? Either Mike.
Yeah, I've got
Mike.
It. There's
you got it, Mike?
Yeah, I've got
okay.
it.
Okay.
So
I appreciate that.
All right, no problem. All right, you guys take care, and you have a great night.
Thank you for calling.
You take care, too.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Get one other on with us. Caller from Tennessee, you're on the line with us. Go ahead.
Hey guys, Bo James. How's everybody doing this week?
Well, I told y'all we played that book he'd call.
This is happening, Bo James.
Yeah. He's talking about the McGuire twins. They're from over here in Hendersonville, about 80 miles from where I live, over on there, over the mountain in North Carolina. And they had a family member that used to come to the town over there, and we'd run every few weeks. And he ain't been there in a few years. I don't know if he's passed or not, but he used to talk about them. They traveled in separate cars. They had something like what Haystacks had, but it had to have special shocks and springs put in it. And the carnival that they worked for before they got in the wrestling business had the cars built for them to make it to the towns. And they had the front seat took out. Because he used to drive them. He said each car had one seat in the front just for the driver, and the twins rode, each one of them rode in the back of each car. And then they just put them little bikes in the trunk, throw their bags in the front where the other seat was at.
Jeez.
Yeah, you missed your opportunity. You could have driven them around in their own vehicle.
Reckon they'd have charged trans if you'd have drove.
How long was their wrestling career? Does anybody know how long they were actually making town?
Well, Billy died in 78, 79, something like that. And the first I ever heard of them was around 72, 73, something like that. I think they first hit Mobile in 73. And they had quit doing anything except Japan, I think. You know, they were wrestling less and less, and were doing that motorcycle stuff. I'm thinking it was Japan. It may have been now. Something in my mind is saying Niagara Falls is where Billy died.
Yeah,
I can't
remember. The guy that knew him, he was a family member there. He said when he wrecked the bike, he was so big that it broke his ribs, and his rib went right through his lung and his heart.
Yeah,
that's what killed him.
Jeez.
Yeah. Well, I never have. The only thing I've ever seen of them is just a couple of clips. It's on that Knoxville tape that floats around, and that's why I figured they couldn't have made the loops too many times because they couldn't look back to too many towns after they'd been through the first time.
No, you didn't book no returns.
Now, that woman in Indiana on that slide, Bobby, I believe that was her sister that I saw up there. Well, I just wanted to pass along my information. Most of the time it's useless, but, you know, I got you for 2 hours, so somebody's got to listen to me. Misty sure don't. I've been trying to get booked out of town all week. She's heading out here landscaping and building a new front porch. So I'm ready to get back in the ring. So,
hey, well, how are you doing health-wise?
Doing good. I feel I'm about 100%. You know, still I'm feeling better. You know, everything's finally healed up, went away. You know, just just a scary few days when it first happened. You know, that's what I get for, you know, getting on it. When you leaving this week, Michael, to hit the road?
Yeah, I'm leaving tomorrow morning, sometime, and I'm gonna swing through Montgomery and spend about an hour or so with my aunt, and then I'm headed up to Casa de Simmons to spend the weekend, and then I'll head to North Carolina on Monday morning.
Well, when you see Bill Dundee when you get to Carolina, ask him where his axe is at.
Yeah, no telling. I'm not sure North Carolina's gonna survive myself, Dundee, and Ronnie Webster all at the same time.
Oh, geez. I'll start checking the news wire every morning.
It's all beach towns y'all are hitting over there too, so that doesn't help matters.
Well, I know Ronnie's on the beach. I'm inland. I'm at Goldsboro and Greenville, North Carolina, the two towns I'm taking care of.
Yeah, Ivan Koloff lives in Greenville now. That's where he's at.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep, he lives out in the country there somewhere just outside of Greenville.
I have to I go through down to Grove. I have to swing by and see if I can catch Fargo.
Yeah.
If he can teach me how to strut.
All right, I'll let you guys run and get to your newspaper clippings. I'll be listening.
Thanks, Bo.
Y'all be good.
Yeah. All right. That was somebody who should have been around in the 70s as well.
Yes.
He was.
That's another one I'm glad likes me. he'd shoot me just sure as I'm sitting here. He ran a thing on Facebook that he was going to have his spring tryouts if anybody wanted to become a wrestler, you know, the right way, be taught by somebody that's, you know, making a living doing it. So I sent him a note and I said, I'm interested in being a wrestler, and I spelled it R-A-S-S-L-E-R. I said, however, I want to know if Misty's involved in the training. I told my wife, I'm glad he can't shoot long distance. What a nice guy.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And a credit to our business. As long as folks like him, it may dwindle down to almost nothing, but as long as folks like Bo James are involved with it and our friend Terry Lawler, it's in good hands.
Yes.
It's in good hands.
Yep.
Well, all right. Let's look at Columbus, Georgia on January 1st of 73. That was, what, about 6 weeks into the war, Bobby?
Yeah, Ann went in business in November of 72. So, yeah, it's somewhere in that neighborhood.
All right. Well, let's look at the Hall South part first. So that's where the familiar names were. And this was in the National Guard Armory in Columbus.
What day was this?
January 1st, 1973.
Okay, so that would have been a Monday night.
Monday night. The main event was a 12-man over-the-top rope battle royal with $1,500 to the winner. The participants were Avenger Flores, which was Francisco Flores,
yeah.
Oates, Bobby Starr, who later became Ron Starr,
right.
Tommy Ziggler, Juan Caruso, Buddy Roberts, Argentine Apollo, The Champ, Wayne Cowan, Crusher Carlson, Oki Shekina, and Jerry Brown. And across the top it says, promoter Dickie Steinborn says, I'm still hanging in there, thanks to the fans.
And that was January 1st of 73.
Yeah.
Silverado. Well, that was...
Also, January 1st, 73, in Columbus, same night, at the Sports Arena on Front Avenue, The NWA office also had a 14-man battle royal. And their lineup was Eddie Graham, Jerry Oates, Bob Armstrong, Sputnik Monroe, Dynamite Jack Evans, Ron Hill, Zodiac, who I'm assuming was Bob Orton.
That's it.
Bill Dromo, Don Curtis, Rocket Monroe, Norville Austin, Jerry Valentine, Frank Hickey, and Choo Choo Man. And then special event, Johnny Rev versus Wee Willie Wilson in a midget match. So they were still bringing in guns out of, well, the bulk of those guys came up out of Florida. When did Ron Hill jump from NWA office over to All Sound, Bobby?
God, I don't know. I didn't even know he worked for Fred. I'm not sure when exactly he showed up, but he showed up with us under a hood. He was the Golden Gladiator.
Right.
And he'd come in as the U.S. Junior Heavyweight Champion or some such nonsense.
He was the World Light Heavyweight Champion.
That's what it was, yeah.
Now, here's two names. I would love to see this as a singles match. Frank Hickey versus Choo Choo Lynn. That would have been a great singles match, wouldn't it? A spaceman and a train engineer.
The big train.
Gary, you remember anything about that night?
Nothing.
All right. Let's see. Next night, Macon. And this is the NWA office. Duke Kiyomoka versus Koa Tiki. Dynamite Jack Evans versus Roy Lee Welch. Peggy Patterson versus Joyce Grable. Hiro Mitsuda versus Don Curtis. And the main event was Sputnik and Rocket Monroe versus Eddie Graham and Bob Armstrong. Now I'm also showing... I'm showing Savannah that same day, so I'm assuming they were running two towns because I've also got a Savannah show.
Yeah, so they used to run Augusta on Monday and Savannah on Tuesday.
Well, this is Macon and Savannah both on Tuesday.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Macon and Savannah ran on Tuesday.
Yep.
So here on the Savannah card, Aaron K. Newman and Sons promotion. Jerry's father-in-law. We had Bob Orton Jr. versus Frank Hickey. The Valentine brothers, which were Jerry and Jim, I think was the other guy's name. They were two guys out of North Carolina, did a cowboy gimmick. They were Sky Brothers knockoffs. You remember them at all, Jerry?
Yes.
And they worked against Ron Hill and Rick Prieto. And Prieto, this is the only time I've ever seen his name listed anywhere other than Georgia, was he came through here in Mobile around this same time for a couple of weeks. The Zodiac versus Pedro Colombo, the midgets again, Wee Willie Wilson versus Johnny Reb, Tony Rose versus Vicky Williams. Semi-main event was Norvell Austin versus Jerry Oates. Main event was Dandy Jack Donovan, the Masked Marvel number 2 versus Leo Garibaldi and Bill Dromo. No idea who the Masked Marvel was. Unless it was Jim Starr and it says number 2, but I don't know if I ever saw the team of it. It just says it goes from saying number 2 to just being the Masked Marvel, so it may have just been Jim Starr. Do you remember that at all, Jerry?
No, I do not.
Well, you guys are going to get bored doing this. I'm not.
Why?
Come on, Jerry. That's only been 35, 40 years ago.
But you know what? There's some matches I remember like it was last night.
I know.
And that one name you read off, I'd never heard that name before. What was his name?
What?
Bretto or?
Who?
Bretto or something?
Oh, Prieto? Rick
yeah.
Prieto?
I've never heard that name in my life.
And, yeah, like I said, other than passing through here and then going there about the same time, it's the only time I've ever seen his name listed anywhere. Okay, on that same night, now Georgia had two, the NWA office had two shows running. Gunkel had one card running in Thomaston, Georgia.
National Guard Army.
Yep. Juan Caruso versus the Grappler. Jesse James and the Champ versus Joe Turner and Bill Bowman. Oki Shekina versus the Avenger. Rock Hunter versus Ted Oates. Assassin number two versus Dick Steinborn. The main event was the Hollywood Blondes, or there's a double main event, the Hollywood Blondes and Dear Brown and Buddy Roberts versus El Mongol and Tommy Ziegler. And then the main event was Ox Baker versus Argentina Apollo.
Bobby, who was the Avenger?
Francisco Flores.
Yeah, okay. Flores. Yep.
I don't remember who the Grappler was.
Cisco Grabaldo. No, Al Velasco.
No, he was the Champ.
He was the Champ.
He was the Champ.
He was the
Champ. Grappler? Grappler.
I don't know who that was back then.
I'm trying to think, because I've gone through these clippings, but it's been a couple years ago. I want to say it was either Poffo, Angelo Poffo, or maybe John Foley under the hood.
Could have been Foley. Foley worked under his hood a little bit here and there, but it wouldn't have been Poffo.
Okay, now there's an All South card for Savannah on the 4th. Savannah Civic
Center, right, Bobby?
Do what, Jerry?
Y'all ran the Civic Center.
We ran the Civic Center. That's the only place I ever remember walking down there.
Yep. Gunkel and Stokes Enterprises.
Yep. Franklin Stokes was a local minister in Savannah. Had a large church there, and they reached out to him to be the promoter, you know, because he was a local. He was your local on the news when something was going on, representing the church or the people or whatever. So that's where he came from.
Okay, this one, Wayne Cowan versus Jim Ledford. He was
God, that's Ledford. A name.
I remember that name.
Ledford was a guy out of South Carolina. He was some kind of karate expert or something. Couldn't work worth a toot, but he was here for a short time.
Yeah, I think he did a little run in Oklahoma, too, and then that then kind of faded away.
Yeah, he was never going to be very successful.
Really? The ad has got Bill Bowman versus Jimmy Gohagan, but I'm sure this is Tim Gohagan.
Timmy Gohagan, yeah.
Joe Turner versus the Grappler. Oki Shekina versus the Champ. Brass Knuckles match. Rock Hunter, Champion versus the Avenger. Now, was Flores wearing a hood at this time?
I don't think he was. I think he had come out from under it. He wasn't wearing it. I don't think he was wearing it anymore.
And the main event was Jody, the Assassin number two, Georgia Heavyweight Champion versus Dick Steinborn in a title match. That was on Thursday. And I don't have anything for the Atlanta office. The Atlanta office not run anything on Thursday night? There?
We ran Athens.
I don't have anything for them. But I have the Atlanta office for the next night, the 5th, which is on Friday. The midgets again, Willie Wilson versus Johnny Reb, Ron Hill versus Bob Orton Jr., Tony Rose and Peggy Patterson versus Vicki Williams and Joyce Grable, Jack Evans versus Chief J. Strongbow, the Zodiac versus Koa Tiki, six-man tag match, Eddie and Mike Graham and Leo Garibaldi versus Norville Austin, The Mask, Marvel, and Dandy Jack Crawford, Rocket Monroe versus Bill Dromo, and an extra special challenge match, Buddy Cole versus Mad Dog Vachon. So there again, you see all the talent that they're bringing in, stacking the cards.
Yeah, we're talking January. Yeah, they still had not established a crew here. They were still bringing people in and out. I mean, there were guys here that were working every night. You know, Dromo and Jerry and I think Bob Orton Sr. might have been here on a pretty regular basis at the time.
He was, Bobby.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I mean, you're right. That's a long time ago. But I don't think they had really established a crew. They didn't have people over yet so that they could have a crew, and you know, run programs. They were shuffling guys in and out. Big time.
I tell you how desperate they were when it really happened. Eddie Graham and I were partners in Columbus, of all people. Eddie Graham. I mean, when this thing really.
He had a part of the office though, by that time, didn't he?
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Yeah.
That he and Lester, I think, had gotten a part of the office there. Okay, the next night, January the 8th, would have been Saturday night, All South. Promoter Dickie Steinborn says, thanks to you, I am not blue.
Thank you, I'm not what?
Thanks to you, I am not blue.
I'm stuck for an answer awesome. On that.
January 8th, 1973 in Columbus, the National Guard Armory. Jerry Bryan and Buddy Roberts versus Tommy Ziggler and Ted Oates, the main event. Avenger Flores versus Oki Shekinah. Joe Turner versus Bearcat Wilkerson. Bill Bowman versus Jesse James. Pedro Godoy versus Bob Garcia. Pedro Godoy, I guess he came up out of Florida because he was a regular there at that point.
Yeah, Godoy was here for a while. Garcia, I don't remember that name.
Bob Garcia?
Yeah.
Yeah, he bounced around. He came through here for a little while, and then when Einhorn had the IWA, he was a fairly regular with them. But then, I think he and Cisco Grimaldo were friends. See, the NWA office was in Waycross. I didn't realize this, Jerry. Aaron Newman ran Waycross as well.
Yes.
There, Statesboro, Jekyll Island, a lot of little spot shows around here. We ran Fort Stewart. He ran Fort Stewart. He ran Surrency. He ran Baxley. There's a lot of good little spot shows around here.
That's the only time I think I ever wanted to shoot your father-in-law was the first time I went to Fort Stewart. And I had to put that ring up by myself.
No,
and you had to back it up to that building, and you had to walk about a half a mile to put it up.
You know, I don't even remember that building, Bobby.
It was sort of a gymnasium right there on the base.
On the base, that's right.
Yeah, and he told me, I'll have you plenty of help. I got there, and he wasn't around, and there wasn't no help.
Maybe he'd gone for the help.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh. Maybe he had you mixed up with what was that promoter thing that you had to ring and did everything himself?
Oh, Van Fleet.
Yeah, Van
Fleet. The thing I remember about Fort Stewart, when you got through and you were getting ready to leave, it seemed like it took you forever to get off the base.
That's a big place, man.
Oh, man, it was huge. And it was dark, and you'd go out through the woods, man, and there was all kind of critters running around. You had to be real careful. But, yeah, I hadn't thought of Fort Stewart in a long time.
I don't even know how he got on that base. I really don't.
He ran... I'll tell you something else he ran one time, Jerry. He ran Beaufort, South Carolina. He ran a spot show over there.
I don't remember that, Bob.
And it's right over near Parris Island where the Marines train.
I
went over there and set the ring up. We run in a National Guard Armory. And I went over there and set the ring up, and he told me, he said, come on and ride with me. And we rode out. Mr. Newman knew everybody.
Everybody.
And we rode out on Parris Island out there. And that was the first time I'd ever been on a Marine base, and it was pouring down rain. And I remember seeing a guy standing in front of the barracks with a water hose running, and it was pouring down rain, and the guy was out there with a water hose. And he, just mud everywhere. And Mr. Newman asked the guy we were talking to what the guy was doing, and he said he was being punished. He was watering the grass. I mean, it was just strange.
So yeah, I never knew he ran Buford.
It was a one-time deal. It might not have been Buford, but it was somewhere right there close to Parris Island because that's where we went.
Well,
to.
It had to have been Buford, Bobby. It was just a
one-time deal.
On the Waycross card, he had Ron Hill versus Red Dupree. Red Dupree later became, he was a gentleman by the name of Ray Schilling. Worked usually up in the Pacific Northwest, worked as Lumberjack Dupree or Logger Larson. I don't know if you have crossed paths with him anywhere else, Jerry.
No, not that I know of, Mike.
Valentine Brothers versus Bob Orton Jr. and Rick Prieto. Dagmar versus Diamond Lil. The Zodiac versus Jerry Oates. There's, again, I'm assuming that was Bob
Orton.
And the main event was Mask Marvel versus Bill Dromo.
I can't think who that would have been. I'll tell you who it was, Bobby. Bobby, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Leon Ogle.
The Masked Marvel was Leon Ogle.
I think so.
Could have been.
I think that is correct.
I'll be real honest with you. If Leon was working with Dromo, I'd have bought a ticket myself.
You know the story on Leon in Columbus, don't you?
Which one?
The one that two guys broke in his
house. Oh, they broke in the house? Oh, yeah.
Leon wasn't a joke.
No.
I mean, he might not have been the greatest wrestler in the world, but Leon, he was a very tough man. But anyhow, I think that's who that was, Bobby.
I think speaking of that, I think Leon got a bum rap too sometimes. You know, I mean, he was placed into an awkward position as Fred's son-in-law. He was probably given a little more power than he needed. And
he didn't have the power he should have had.
Or maybe that was it. But he got a bum rap
because of the other situation there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. 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 That was anyway. That was, it was because I always liked Leon. We always got along.
He was a good guy. He was a very, very good guy. Very. Let me tell you something. There's not a straighter lace. Would not lie to you. Would not stretch the truth, bend it, or any way. I mean, if Leon said it's raining, there's no need to go, look, it's raining, you know?
Yeah.
But the other situation there that he had to deal with, and you know what I'm talking about. That was That's why he eventually left.
Well, I don't know. Like I say, given everything, and I got along with everybody as best I could out of that whole office because I had to work with them on a regular basis, with Barnett and out of Atlanta and so forth. But I'm just loosening you up here. It was, you're talking about trusting Leon. There was other people in there I wouldn't trust no further than I could throw them.
That
proved to be the case more so than anybody even imagined toward the end of the thing there. But it was,
That's why Leon left.
Well, probably not a bad move.
No.
Because he wasn't going to ever get over the rest of that situation.
No. He knew it. Yeah. He wasn't going to fight it anymore. I respect him for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the last time I saw Leon was when he came with you to Mobile. Didn't he come with you the year you came down?
That is correct. Sure did.
Yeah, sure did. That was the last time I saw him.
He's a good guy. All right, Mr. Norris, feed us some more that we don't know.
Or I don't know. Yeah.
Here's another head-to-head. Both these cards were in Atlanta. Gunkel was at the City Auditorium. This is January 9th, 1973. Wayne Callen versus the champ. Bob Garcia and Bobby Starr versus Pedro Godoy and Crusher Carlson. Juan Caruso versus the Grappler. Jesse James versus Oki Shekina. Bill Bowman and Joe Turner versus Ted Oates and Bearcat Wilkerson. Alfred Hayes versus Rock Hunter. The Hollywood Blondes versus Tommy Ziegler and the Avenger. Georgia TV title match, Hawk Baker defeated Dick Steinborn to become the new champion. Georgia title match, the Assassin number 2 defeated El Mongol to retain the title. That was the All-South card. Now, the Atlanta card was also at the Sports Arena. Now, how did they do that? No, the Sports Arena, that was on Chester Avenue. That was a different
deal. Yeah, that was.
This one just says All-Star card including Ladies World Championship match, double main event, Jack Resko versus the Masked Marvel, Norvell Austin versus Bearcat Wright. Paul Jones 29th anniversary.
That Bobby, must have been a see a house drawn in that arena.
What, Sports Arena?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I saw it full.
Have you?
Yeah, but I was a kid now. We're going back to when I was a kid. It held about 3,000 people.
I know it was big.
And when I was a kid going to the matches, I've seen it packed.
But I know early on, Bobby, if we couldn't get the auditorium,
yeah,
and go over there, it was just like maybe half full.
Well, the place had a real bad reputation. You know, the country western dance is there, and there was fights over all the time. And I mean, the sports arena had a bad reputation, and that was part of it. You know, a lot of families wouldn't go over there.
Right.
And that was part of it. Parking. There was a lot of issues with the building itself, as far as you know, the things you were doing. But
right. But when you was going all the time as a kid, it wasn't there all the time, was it?
No, just when they couldn't get the auditorium.
Okay.
See, going back to when I was a kid, and even growing up as a teenager, Holiday on Ice came in for 10 days in February. So they couldn't get it for one or two Fridays in February.
And my wife was skating with them, too.
Well, I went. There was
I'm
a skater
to hear
there.
That.
A guy named Paul Andre used to be the comic, the clown skater in the show. He did the
what
comedy routines. I walked in up there one time when I was about 13, asked the guy for a job, and he had the concession where he sold the snow cones and the cotton candy, and I worked for the guy till I got out of high school. Like every year I'd walk in, he'd say, here you go.
What was his name?
Paul Andre.
Let me ask Kathy if she remembers him. Kathy. Oh, where is he going? Let me ask. Hold on.
You remember a guy with a high show named Paul Andre?
Yeah.
She remembers him.
Yeah.
She remembers him.
Yeah. I work for him every year in Atlanta.
But what? He called her a peachy. She was a Georgia peach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she remembers it.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. And But February the ice show came in. Then in April the Shrine Circus was there. There was one or two Fridays they had to run the arena. And then the end of May through June they missed some dates because of high school graduations. And then to the best of my knowledge they had it every other Friday the rest of the year.
You know, Bobby, I wrestled in that City Auditorium for, I don't know. Of course, you was in it more than I was because you went there as a kid. But where did all those people park?
There were parking lots all around. You had to go two or three blocks away, but there was a lot of parking lots down around Grady Hospital, and that's where most of them parked. A lot of people rode the bus.
Well, they'd have been better off.
Yeah, a lot of people rode the bus down there, but there were some spaces there. Now, we live close enough. You know, when I first started going, as a young kid, when I first started going, they wasn't selling out. You could walk in up there at 8:20, 8:25, buy a ticket and go sit down, find a seat.
Come on, man.
And then when Renesto came in here and started booking, of course, I didn't notice at the time, but, you know, later on I learned when Renesto come in here, he turned this thing around and they started drawing. Well, then what we would do is my mom would take me up there about 6:15 and let me out. And I'd go in and buy two tickets, and then I'd go upstairs and sit down and read a book or something. And then about 8:15, I'd get somebody to save the two seats, and I'd run downstairs with my uncle's ticket, and he'd come in. But my mom would drop us off and pick us up. We lived close enough, that wasn't a big deal.
Well, that worked good.
But it was a, yeah, I no telling how many matches I went to there. Did the Holiday on Ice. I graduated from high school in that building. And then, like I say, I worked the last show that they ever had there before they shut it down. So it was a big part of my life went away when they tore that place down.
They did tear it down?
The auditorium part's gone. The front of the building's still there.
I'll be dogged.
Yeah, I go by there every, when I leave work every day, I come right by the front of it.
If those walls could talk, huh?
Oh, jeez.
That's also where the ticket office wasn't it, Bobby?
No, the ticket office was at Sports Arena.
I thought you were talking about sports. You're talking about the auditorium.
I'm talking about the auditorium. Well, okay. The Sports Arena is gone too now.
Yeah.
It's gone. When as a kid, the wrestling ticket office was in a parking garage on Houston Street. Or Houston Street, depending on what part of the world you live in. It's Houston Street in Atlanta.
Went back for years,
yeah.
Bobby. You know that?
Do what?
That place on Houston Street went back for years.
Yeah, it was right across. Paul Jones lived in the penthouse at the White House Motor Inn, which was right across the street. And the ticket office was at 68 Houston Street. And then Paul and Gunkel bought the sports arena, and then somehow Paul owned part of that land in Griffin, I think, down there, or something around. I don't remember exactly how it worked, but anyway, Gunkel and them swapped some land, and Paul wound up with the arena. But they moved the ticket office to the sports arena.
But when Ann Gunkel was running, she had a ticket office on Houston Street as well, right?
Started out. The first ticket office we had was on Houston Street. It was up the street from where the old one used to be. And then they moved it down to 20 Ivy Street, which was you could look out the front door of that building and see the front of the auditorium.
Okay.
But that was the ticket office and the wrestling. When she first opened up her wrestling office, she rented an office space out in a office park out on North Peachtree Road. And son, it was nice enough. It could have been doctor's offices or corporate suites of some company. I mean, Harbin used to scream they were spending too much money for the office, but eventually they talked her out of getting rid of that, and they moved the office. That's when they moved to Ivy Street downtown. They moved the office there.
All right, so the Atlanta office, that was on January 9th. They also ran Macon that same day. And Jerry was on this card. Diamond Lil versus Darling Dagmar. That wasn't you, Jerry. You weren't involved in that.
No, sir. I'm going to whip both of them.
Frank Hickey versus Roy Lee Welch.
Oh,
Jerry Lewis versus Dynamite Jack Evans. Do you remember Jack Evans?
Very well.
He was a good worker from every time.
Whatever happened to Jack Evans?
The last I know of, he had a fairly decent run in the early 80s in Puerto Rico. He and Larry Sharp were there, North American or World Tag Team Champions or whatever. And then they were doing jobs up in New York together as a team. And then after that, I don't know. I know he spent a lot of time in the Carolinas there for a while. He and Flair were big buddies. But he came through here. He worked as Jack Evans and then came back through doing an Arabic gimmick called the Great Gamma. He was one of those. He worked out in Seattle with Dean Silverstone for a while. He worked. He worked all over the place. He worked Georgia. He worked Florida. He worked Oklahoma. He worked all over the place. But I have no clue as to whatever became of him.
Yeah, me dog.
Semifinal on this: Hiro Matsuda and Rocket Monroe versus Bob Armstrong and Toa Tiki. Which are two weird teams. The main event was a lights-out match between Sputnik and Eddie Graham. So So Eddie was spending a lot of time up here, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
And then, let's see, next day, NWA was in Columbus. Dynamite Jack Evans versus Bob Orton Jr. Red Dupree and Frank Hickey versus Koa Tiki and Pedro Colombo. There's another good worker, Pedro Colombo. Darling Dagmar versus Diamond Leo. Well, maybe we got our money out of you guys that week, didn't it? Mass Zodiac versus Ron Hill. Hiro Matsuda versus Bob Armstrong for the Columbus Heavyweight Championship. Bob was the champion. Main event was Andy Jack Morrell and Norvell Austin versus Big Bill Dromo and Jerry Oates. You worked a lot with Norvell during that time, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
He was very under, and I'm not saying that because he was one of my mentors and a friend of mine that helped me get in the business, but a lot of people have totally forgotten what a good worker Norvell Austin was. He could do things I didn't think anybody did before.
Let me say something. That guy worked hard in that ring, man. He worked hard.
He was fun to rib, too. He wore his trunks till the elastic was out of him. So I used to love to get him and give him a wedgie. I was front face, box him, and reach over and give him a wedgie.
I'll never forget. You talking to? Go ahead.
Yeah, he was the first person I ever saw throw a drop kick and land back on his feet.
Really?
Yeah.
You talking about wore out trunks? I know this is where I got in the business. I know Bad Boy and Billy Boy was on Columbus TV. I was in high school. And I think Jim Kroger was the announcer. And he told Billy Boy, he said, I see you got some new tights. He said, yeah, them other ones just wore out. I thought, what?
Uncle Enterprises was in Savannah that night, promoter Franklin Stokes II. Had a 20-man over-the-top battle royal. Ox Baker, the Assassin No. 2, Jerry Brown, Buddy Roberts, Rock Hunter, Joe Turner, Bill Bowman, Guillotine Gordon. Got him and Ox Baker in the ring at the same time. Ooh. Crusher Carlson, Oki Shekina, El Mongo, Dick Steinborn, Tommy Sigler, The Avenger, Ted Oates, The Grappler, Bearcat Wilkerson, Jesse James, The Champ, and Jim Ledford.
Bobby, did you ever have the pleasure of wrestling Swede Carlson?
No, I refereed a lot of his matches.
I'll leave it alone.
There were some guys, Jerry, that meant well.
they were just
so clumsy that they couldn't help themselves.
I think we had some kind of dog with him.
Oh, yeah. Had a Labrador.
Like a wolf, didn't he?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Some kind of wolf-looking dog. Always had guns and I don't know. I thought he lived in the woods or something. I don't know where
I told you the story about the dog in the Jeep, didn't I?
Vaguely, I remember.
About Renesto? He parked that, Swede drove a Jeep Wrangler before it was popular to drive a Jeep Wrangler.
Yes, he did. That's why I thought
he parked that thing out.
He had
high-dollar wheels. I mean, he had a lot of money invested in this thing. He parked it out behind a building there in Warner Robins one night and left that dog in there and left the keys in it. And Renesto told him, said, Swede, you left the keys in? He said, hey, I got the dog in there, so won't I mess with that Jeep? So Ernesto gave me $10 and told me to go buy all the hot dogs I could buy for $10. and that's probably 40, 50 cents a piece back in. I come back with a double handful, and we sat there on the back deck of that building there in Warner Robins, and he took them weenies out of them hot dogs, and he started out flipping them to that dog. And after about half of them was gone, that dog was eating them out of his hand. And he climbed in there and fired that Jeep up, was riding around the parking lot blowing the horn. Swede was a little hot.
Yeah, he wasn't a fellow you could rib with.
No, I'd hated to have been that dog at night.
You probably Ooh.
Never saw that dog again, Bobby.
Goodness.
He might have sold him to Mr. Fuji.
Didn't he wind up living in Georgia, Bobby?
Yes, he was living in Griffin, and I heard that he had an accident on his – he cut his leg off with a chainsaw, is what I heard, and he was confined to a wheelchair until he died. But yeah, he was somewhere down around Griffin's, what I heard.
He was a strange man.
No, not in the wrestling business. It wasn't strange.
Yeah, well. He had a few.
Well, Jared, you talking about Carlson? Did you ever work with DSN Gordon?
Yes, I did. I kind of forgot about that until you said his name a while ago.
I've heard horror stories about him, about how bad
poor fella, he you go to hook up with him, and you don't know if he's looking in the balcony or at you or what. He's not with us anymore, is he?
No, he's
I don't think so.
That was another one that worked through a ton of gimmicks. He was Evil Eye Valentine. He was Jimmy Valentine.
He could have just walked out and he was a gimmick.
I mean, he had a great look. He had a great look, but he just... he was voted, of all the wrestlers that ever passed through Japan, he was voted the worst American wrestler that ever worked in Japan.
You know, I was the first time I went to Japan, the first time I went to Japan, he was on the tour. And I'll vouch for that.
Oh.
But the last gimmick he did, he worked in the Carolinas. And I think he was teamed with Ox Baker, if you can imagine that duo together. But he had shaved his head. You know, he always had blonde hair. Well, he shaved his head, and the bad eye, he wore a patch over it, and he dressed like a gangster, mafioso, and he was called Enforcer Luciano.
Well, I'm sure if those two were teamed up, the emergency rooms filled up everywhere.
Well, you know, Joe Turner tickles me talking about teaming up with Ox, and he said him and Bill got beat up worse than the guys they was working with. You know.
Oh man.
This is honest to good. He hit me harder than any human being's ever hit me in my life.
Let me tell you something. He was a big man.
Yes, sir. And he had arthritis in his elbows. He couldn't bend them, and he just. I mean, he was. Ooh.
Joe Turner told me the reason he was so strong is he grew up. He was a farm boy from Iowa.
That is correct.
He was in the high school or whatever it was. He worked in a meat packing plant. And he'd heft those carcasses, those cow carcasses over his shoulder, and then that's why how he got to be so strong. But believe it or not, he was also a high school wrestling champion. He had a legitimate amateur background, yeah. Yeah, but... Did you ever seen, neither one of you were in the business, and I certainly wasn't, but I've seen pictures of what he was, the gimmick he had when he first broke in the business.
I've seen pictures of him.
In the boxing shorts, long underwear, long handle underwear. And
yes, exactly.
High top sneakers. And he was a baby fan.
Well.
Oh, man.
I had the privilege of going out to Dean Silverstone's several years ago. I guess it's probably been 10, 12 years ago. And I got to meet Ox Anderson. And Ox Anderson, to that day, Ox, I don't know how old he was. He was up in years. He was hot because Ox Baker had stole his name.
Still hot about it.
Oh, he was still hot about it. Yes.
Did
you
well, there was
to
another
Ox. Do what?
I said there was a third guy that mainly worked in the Carolinas whenever all those outlaw groups, like when George Becker started running the Carolinas against the Crockett's, there was a guy called Ox the Ripper. And he was like a blonde McGuire twin.
Jeez. Oh,
triplet.
I think Mike's making some of this stuff up now.
Oh.
I am not. I'm telling you, there's been some characters passed through our business. Oh, well, let's move on to the next card. January 12th, Atlanta, Georgia. This is the NWA office. Darling Dagmar versus Diamond Lee. I wish I had a dollar for every match those two ever had against each other.
Wouldn't you?
If you had a dollar for every time Lil won a match, you'd owe somebody money.
I wonder who worked more against each other. Those two or Bobo Brazil and the Sheik?
I'd say Diamond Lil and
Dagmar.
I don't know. Bobo Brazil and the Sheik worked against each other from the 50s to the 90s for 40
Did
years.
Did they really?
Jeez. I had never met Dagmar. She came to Mobile 2 years ago. It's the first time I ever met her. She quit about the time. She was working for NWA as I was starting with Ann, and she quit. You know, she got married and quit the business. And it's the first time I'd ever met her. What a doll she is.
She always was, by the
way. Oh, geez, just pleasant, fun to be with. And she hadn't been around any of the guys or anybody in the business for years, and she just was like a kid in a toy shop. And then she came to Las Vegas last year, and I got to know her even a little better. We spent a lot of time together, and it was just what an absolute joy it was to finally get to know her.
She's a sweet lady.
And I heard that we asked Joyce about her in Mobile this year. You know, she fell and broke her leg, and they said she seems to be doing some better. So hopefully she'll get back on her feet again.
That's another one we'll have to get on the try and get on the show. That'd be a good show to have.
Yes, it would.
Since neither one of the McGuire twins are alive anymore, I'd try and get them on the show. Gary, can talk to them.
Yes, sir. Talk about that match we have.
Well, if we ever get Garvin on the show, maybe he'll remember.
Ronnie probably erased that from his memory.
Well, he didn't remember my match. I'm still upset.
Oh, but anyway, here's the Atlanta card for the 12th of January. Cowboy Bill Watts with the Masked Marvel. Louis Tillett beat Norville Austin. Eddie and Mike Graham defeated the Valentine Brothers. Zodiac defeated Jerry Oates. I can't believe you didn't make Bob Orton do a job for you, Jerry.
I can't either.
You should have got him in that double wrist lock. He'd probably
did either one of y'all ever experience that?
No, sir.
Never did.
I saw enough of him, though. I wouldn't have wanted to.
He's a little snug. They said I was snug. I wasn't nothing compared to that.
No, wait a minute, Jerry. You worked snug. I can vouch for that. What I've heard about Bob, but the word they used with him wasn't snug, it was stiff.
I didn't want to go that far, sir. I tried to be kind this evening. But you got the drift, though, ain't you?
Yes. Well, I tell you, now I never worked with a guy. I mean, I saw him as a kid, but Charlie Smith told me this. He said the worst guy he was ever around was Hans Schmidt. He said he was awful.
Listen, I worked with him one time in Florida. I was horrified. That wasn't no joke either.
I think his appearance would have scared me because he had all kind of knots on his back from all the broken ribs. That would have scared me. Did you ever work with Valentine, Johnny Valentine, Jerry?
No, I did not.
You escaped that one.
Slowing work. That was your slow, methodical worker there, but he was good. He was very good.
He's one of those that everybody says, I know wrestling's not real, but Johnny Valentine's real.
The boys were saying that.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I know somebody who actually has had the pleasure. He worked with Johnny and Greg either the same day or 2 days apart, Greg Lake, who's a guy that worked in Detroit, who's called into the show a couple of times, he said that distinct pleasure working with Johnny one day and Greg the next, or Johnny in the morning and Greg that afternoon. I don't remember how it was, but
he might have quit after that. Did you ever work with Greg, either one of you guys?
Never did. I was in a ring referee, and I did want to.
That was another one. He didn't do much now, but what he did,
it meant something.
You knew he was there.
Well, here's a good match. Bob Armstrong and Bill Dromo versus Sputnik and Rocket Monroe. You talking about some stiff people.
Rocket said they were in Atlanta one night and said Sputnik and Dromo were in the ring and they started exchanging punches. No, I got it backwards. It was Rocket and Dromo. They started exchanging punches in the chest. And, of course, as Dromo would lay them in, Rocket would lay them in. You know, Rocket was like, even to the day he died, Rocket was like a fireplug. I mean, he was solid as a rock. And they were just pounding on one another. And finally, Rocket said he took a bump and he reached over and tagged Sputnik. And he said, before Sputnik come in the ring, he said, "Hey, Pally, this is the Sputsy coming in. This ain't the crazy kid."
You want to get that squared away first.
Yes, sir. Oh. Rocket said they were in Atlanta one night or somewhere, and he said he slipped up behind Dromo somewhere. Anyway, he nailed him right between the shoulder blades. And said Dromo just turned around and looked at him and said that was all he did. And he said it was probably 6 months later. He said he was standing on a stage in Birmingham, Alabama at Boutwell. And he said he didn't know Dromo was there. And he said when Dromo hit him, he said he knocked him off the stage. And he said, when he hit the floor, he was ready to fight because he didn't know who did it. He said he turned around, he looked at the stage, and said Dromo was there, and said he gave him the same line and walked off.
Dromo could lay him in there now.
Yes, he could.
I worked with Bill.
We'll do a couple more here, and then we'll wind it up. This is another from Denver 15th. Uncle was in Columbus. Let's see what Dickie has to say on this one. Promoter Dickie Steinborn says a retentive memory is a good thing, but some of us forget. How did he come up with all these little sayings here?
I have no idea, sir.
He don't either.
I wonder what his inspiration was. Let's see. Bob Garcia versus Juan Caruso. Usher Carlson and Pedro Godoy versus Timmy Gohagan and the Masked Champ. Miss Mariana Ray versus Estella Molina. Main event was Tommy Ziegler versus the Assassin II for the Georgia Heavyweight Championship, and plus one other match. That must have been you, Bobby.
Jeez. I was back then. I was humping chairs, man. I was setting up and breaking down. I hadn't started yet. Golly, You know, you've been reading these cards, you know, and they're all within a, two, three-week period there.
Yeah, exactly.
There again, there's no rhyme nor reason to them either at this point. You know, between the Atlanta office and Gunkel, I think at that point it was like two fighters. They were just kind of sparring, seeing who was going to do what.
That's about what it boiled down to.
Yeah, really. I mean, it was, you know.
Jockeying the position.
Here's the NWA card. They were back in Waycross. Now, this one's interesting because some of the talent on here, they were all from Los Angeles. I don't know if they were
on vacation, passing through, or what they were, but they had Bob Orton Jr. versus Pedro Colombo, Gail Cochran versus the Masked Marvel, Norvell Austin and Bengali, who was an L.A. guy, versus El Cicadelico and La Pantera Negra, which was both of those were from L.A. Main event.
They were brothers.
Yeah. Who's that?
Weren't they brothers?
Bengali and Pantera Negra were, yeah.
They were Mascaris' brothers.
Well, Cicadelico was, yeah. He was, that was, what was his name? I can't remember what his first name was, but he was the middle. Cicadelico was the middle. Dos Caras was the youngest, and of course, Mascaris was the oldest.
Right.
Zodiac versus Roy Lee Welch. The main event was Sputnik versus Romo. So those guys, well, Cicadelico was in Florida for a while, because I know he and Roberto came some down there, and then Cicadelico came in here for a few weeks later on in 73, around, I want to say, sometime around the summer of 73, he came through here. He was the best worker out of all three of them to me.
Yeah.
Well, I heard, I mean, here again, this is just what I was heard and what I've been told by different people. On those Waycross cards, they were bringing a lot of the guys out of Florida up here because it was closer for them to come up here than it was sending from Atlanta.
Could be.
That Waycross was a healthy trip, and I don't care where you were coming from.
Wasn't it?
If you came from Atlanta, you had interstate for about 175 miles, and you had about a 70-mile run on two-lane road.
It was a straight shot, though.
It was straight, yes, sir, and flat.
I used to be going to Waycross on Monday, and I passed some creek, and I see Dromo off out there fishing somewhere.
Yes, sir.
I just kept going.
Did they ever run Brunswick down there? Did anybody ever run Brunswick?
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Newman ran it.
Did he?
Mm-hmm.
Was it a regular stop or just a spot town?
No. I don't know why they didn't run it regular. Just could find days for it, I guess.
How far is that from Savannah, Gary?
It's about a little over an hour. It's not far.
Is it far away?
Yeah.
Hmm. The reason I'm asking is the circus is going to be there Monday, and I put your name on the list to ride the cannon. So
he's going to be here this Monday?
I think so. I think they're going to be there on the 26th, yeah. I'm not sure. I know my schedule.
It may be 45 miles from here. I'm not sure.
Is the deck? I thought it was a little further than that. That might.
How far is Brunswick from here, Kenny? Brunswick. An hour.
Just about an hour from here.
Yeah. Okay. I think we ran Jekyll Island a lot more than we ran Brunswick.
Valdosta was a regular stop, wasn't it?
Yes, oh my gosh.
That's bad, huh?
That'll make you have nightmares.
Ask Bobby, he'll tell you about it.
They didn't have a building down there worth a toot.
Sure didn't.
They had an old one. It was called Mathis Civic Center. One side was a theater, and the other side was like an exhibition hall, and it was flat.
It was. I can't believe you said that. That's exactly what I was going to say. Flat and number of chairs in there.
Yes, sir, that's it.
And it was lit up like a Christmas tree in there.
I mean, it was, you know, there was no way to backlight the ring or any, you know.
Bobby, I never saw a house there, never.
One time, they took Andre the Giant down there, and they filled that place up, and the fire marshal made them quit selling tickets. And you remember that? You remember that they had a little stage like thing in that place?
Yes.
Charlie's friend, the one we call Bogus, he was still alive. The fire Smitty had the fire marshal at the front door, and Bogus was at the back door selling standing room only for $10 a person and running them in just as fast as he could get them in.
You don't think Charlie put him up to that, do you?
Oh, geez.
No, come on.
Man, that's the only time I ever saw a house there. We'd run the theater side and set the ring. You talk about awful. We'd set the ring up on the stage, and the people would be out there sitting like in a movie theater in chairs out there. Well, you had to work to one side of the ring for the people to even know what was going on.
The only place I ever wrestled like that was in Salem, Oregon, and we ran it every week. It was an old theater.
Jeez.
Horrible.
Oh, there's just no way to do it. I mean, it's just, even if you're a spectator, it's like you're watching a movie.
Exactly.
It becomes one-dimensional to you because you can't see the backside of the ring it's awful.
Wow. Well, guys, we are out of time, and I hope this was a little something different.
Well, I enjoyed this tonight, really.
I did, too.
Stirred the cobwebs a little bit and everything, but we will get together. I'll be in North Carolina next week. Bobby, I'll see you sometime tomorrow evening. I'll give you a call sometime when I'm during the day.
Bobby, be like Tom Bodette. Leave the light on.
Leave the light on. You got that right. Michael, call me when we hang up here. Give me a holler at home.
I will.
All right.
All right, guys. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you guys next week.
All right, Jerry. Have a good week,
safe,
man.
Guys. You too.
See you.
Bye-bye. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
For listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.